talking about punching a time clock and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. Well, I have a great show for you today. First, let me get this weather out of the way. It's 68 degrees here in Elk City, and the winds are out of the south at 8 miles an hour, and the humidity is 27. With me on the phone today from the big house in Washington, I have the great Oklahoman from Roger Mills County, U.S. Congressman Frank Lucas, on the phone with me. Good afternoon, sir.
Jimmy, it's good to be with you to talk about the things that really matter back home.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot going on. But first things first, I got to give you some crap. And I know you're a congressman, but you live here out in western Oklahoma, so you know why. Haven't I seen you at Circle M Veterinarian Clinic in the last 3 months, or at least 4 months, because you're always there when I'm there? Is Linda doing the tough work?
Well, Jimmy, I promise you I've been there, because there's nothing more important than Linda Lucas, the herdsman, than the health and well-being of those four-legged critters. So we just haven't been there at the same time, but I'm doing my best to help the veterinarian community, I promise.
Every time I show up to do something with my cattle and you're there, I drive up there to where we let the cattle out, and I look in there, and I know you're in there because you even overtower Joey. So
you will attest then that I'm really involved in the livestock business.
You are.
To all of our listeners who may not have a chance to see me in real clothes. I appreciate that, Jimmy.
Yeah, no problem. I'm here to help you with your votes. So, but I know you just got back in Washington. What, probably this last weekend or yesterday or something?
We were home for Thanksgiving. Everybody was. So. Yep. So I drug back in yesterday, and we have votes today and tomorrow and perhaps Friday, so we'll see what the schedule is going to be.
Well, great. Well, I'm glad you got back there safely, and I hope your Thanksgiving was just as good as mine. And, man, it's warm in Oklahoma, isn't it?
Absolutely. It is warm and starting to be unseasonably dry, at least where Linda Lucas runs cattle in Roger Mills County. So my fingers are crossed. We need a little moisture, Jimmy.
Yeah, we all do. It's yesterday driving down to move my irrigation. I'm lucky I got a little bit of irrigation on some of my land, mm-hmm. not all of it, but man, you can see them blue streaks start showing in them rye and wheat fields, and it's not good. But and nothing in the forecast so far, but hopefully our prayers will be answered in the near future. So
you bet. And third congressional district, of course, is basically the northwest half of the great state of Oklahoma, from Hollis to the suburbs of Oklahoma City around to the north side of Tulsa. The wheat pasture looks better the farther east you go, but you know the weather patterns are just a little different the farther east in Oklahoma you go. But it's our turn. We deserve a little rain too.
Oh yeah, it's like you get to like between Foss and Clinton there on I-40, like Stafford mm-hmm. Road. It's like you just get into another world when you cross that mile going east. So
absolutely, and in the far east end of the district, over on the north side, literally they do raise dry land corn and soybeans down in the creek bottoms and the river bottoms.
Yep.
And I will never have that much moisture in Roger Mills County.
No, and that red dirt's kind of hard to grow corn. So, mm-hmm. but it grows good wheat pasture though. So, You and I talked before the show come on, and there's a mess brewing in Washington. Well, there's a mess in Washington right now. But
yes.
I got a few things to ask you about, and you're familiar with the American Rescue Plan Act.
And, yes.
And in that plan, there was some money set aside to help out, pay farm debt off for the socially disadvantaged. And my question to you is, I don't know if you had any part to do with that. And I know those plans were going like 100 miles an hour and 5 inches thick, but why do you think that the females and the U.S. veterans of the military wasn't included in that rescue plan on that part of the plan?
First off, Jimmy, I didn't vote for the language that created the American Rescue Plan. And understand, my perspective was you can't pick winners and choosers. If you're going to help people who have problems, then you need to help everybody. You can't pick and choose folks. This language came out of the House Agriculture Committee. The chairman of the committee now is a fellow by the name of David Scott from Georgia. David was very focused on minority farmers, what he refers to as socially disadvantaged farmers. They put a bill together to basically say that they would pay off the mortgages and the operating loans of anybody who fell in that category. And not only would they pay off the bill at the bank or at Farm Credit, they would also pay 120% of the value of the loan, because when your debt's paid off like that, there's a tax liability.
Right.
So that's the trail they went down. Then they discovered, as they were running the bill, that the language covered more. They used a definition in the farm bill that covered more folks than they wanted to, because basically the language they were using said American Indians, Alaskan Natives, Asians, Blacks, African Americans, Native Hawaiians, Pacific Islanders, Hispanics would be covered, and the definition also covered Caucasian women. Now, when they realized what they'd done, the Democrats on the Ag Committee then went in and changed the definition and rolled it back to an earlier definition to exclude Caucasian women.
Right.
So in the bill they passed out, man or woman, if you are part or whole American Indian, Alaskan Native, an Asian, a Black, or African American, however you want to describe it,
yep,
Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander, Hispanics, then this would apply to you. They got the bill slammed through after they cut out the other two groups.
Yeah.
The language then was signed by President Biden, and lo and behold, you wouldn't be surprised to know that people started suing the federal government. But before the lawsuits were filed, Jimmy, USDA looked at what the committee had done and said, now, whoa, no, you can't pay off all these debts because there are other sections of federal law that covered. So what it wound up being was, if you had a direct loan from USDA or a bank loan guaranteed by USDA, but not just a regular mortgage at Farm Credit, not just a regular operating loan down at the bank, and even if you fell into this minority category that they picked, you wouldn't qualify for the debt. So they really, whatever they were trying to do initially, they botched it up so thoroughly that now there's 3, 4, 5 different lawsuits filed, so none of the money's moving. Now, here's one of the ironies, Jimmy. But the way they worded this, I don't think they intended to do this, but by accident, think about the number of Native Americans we have in Oklahoma, African Americans, the diversity, Hispanics we have in Oklahoma. It's estimated of the $5 billion they set aside, if this ever actually were to happen, $1.5 billion of it would come to Oklahoma. I promise you, it was not the intent of the committee to drive most of the money to Oklahoma, because no one appreciates how diverse we are. So bottom line is this: the committee chose to pick and choose who they wanted to help.
Yep.
They changed the definition a couple times to restrict it to certain people. They did such a sloppy job of drafting it that USDA then limited it even more, and now the courts have stopped it. So yes, it's talk about the
a mess.
Even if they were trying to do the right thing, they created the most amazing mess that I don't know that can be sorted out. So
if you
fall in those categories and you went down and applied and certified that you were a minority, I'm sorry, but right now it's tied up in court, so don't be planning on that money to help you make your payment this time.
Yeah, keep going like nothing's happening. And
exactly, Jimmy.
That's exactly what needs to happen, because Oklahoma has the, I hope I have this right, Oklahoma has one of the largest, if not the largest, population of American Indians.
Yes, absolutely. And 39 different tribes.
Yeah, and so, bam, yeah, sure, a big part of the money's going to come here if you fall under that category.
Well, and the veterans, you mentioned that part, they were never included in the bill. I can't give you a reason why, other than because they were not defined as a minority group, but as a, you know, a service group because of their military service. But again, the committee botched this stuff up so thoroughly, I don't know that it'll ever actually happen. And I'm certain they didn't plan on, you know, a quarter of the money coming to Oklahoma. Absolutely sure they didn't plan on that happening.
Well, I thought about that, and you know, if there's a lot of loans at the bank that are guaranteed by the USDA and our farm credit, and this all gets paid off, I could just not imagine the amount of money, like farm credit service agencies, how much money those companies will lose because those notes go away all of a sudden, bam, just shock, you know, just away.
That is a good point too. And again, remember the fairness question. What if you don't happen to be a minority, but you're trying to farm, you're having hard circumstances, you're facing challenges, your neighbor can be helped, your neighbor on the other side can be helped, but just because you don't look like them, you don't get any help? That's just not fair.
It's not fair at all. Well, I have U.S. Congressman Frank Lucas from District 3 out here. He lives in Roger Mills County, just right north of here. Matter of fact, we're so close in counties, we use the same vet. I got him on Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KCO. Well, another question for you. Yes. Your thoughts on the vaccine mandates put out under the President Biden, under his authority on USDA employees?
First off, Jimmy, I believe in vaccines. I've been vaccinated. I'm a senior Republican on the Science Committee. I've watched how this stuff has been developed.
Right.
So I've been vaccinated, just for the public record. Now, set that aside for a moment, the mandate business. I don't personally believe that ordering people to be vaccinated, whether they work for the federal government or private business, I don't believe that serves any purpose other than to make people mad and bow up and refuse to be vaccinated. We all need to think through whether it's in our best interest and our family's best interest to be vaccinated and make that decision for ourselves. The Biden administration is pushing this stuff hard. They not only have ordered federal employees and the military to be vaccinated as a requirement for your job, non-option, but in the case of USDA, it appears to be the contractors who work with them and a variety of other people are caught in this. And
board
the deadline's
members.
Coming up pretty soon.
Yep, board members at the local county level, that if you're on that board.
Exactly.
Whether it's
exactly.
Yep.
And it's not just ordering federal government employees or, like the county FSA board members, people who participate in the program who are in the building. They also changed the OSHA rules, the Office of Occupational Safety and whatever, the work standard enforcers from the federal government, to say that any company that hires 100 or more people have to have all of their private company employees, not federal employees, not government employees, private company people vaccinated too. Now that's being fought in court and it's been stayed. I'm not an attorney, Jimmy, but it's been stayed, so it's been stopped.
Oh, I got my degree. I got my degree.
Exactly.
So no, I'm kidding.
The Biden administration is bound and determined to tell people what to do and how to do it and when to do it. Again, I think everybody needs to look at the vaccination issue. I think it's in your best interest, but that said, I don't believe the federal government or the President of the United States has the right or should have the authority to tell you, as a private citizen, whether you work for the federal government or you're working for a company that might not have anything to do with the federal government, you have to be vaccinated. That's over the top, Jimmy. That's out of bounds.
It's not American because you said earlier you've been vaccinated. I have not been vaccinated. I just had the COVID during a rodeo here in September at Elk City, and I've considered it, yes. But right now my doctor, even the doctor says your antibodies are good. Just chill out and move on and live your normal life. This is not about whether you believe you should have the vaccination or you should not. It's about somebody forcing you to take something that you ain't really had a chance to figure out if you want it yet or not.
Exactly.
And
so we're
and
working
I got
our way through this.
And I have lots of people that I know that work in all the counties in the FSA and the NRCS, because I deal with them on this show and I deal with them in real life out there. And you know, Ag Secretary Valsack said that it wouldn't affect the day-to-day operations if it came and they lost a certain percentage of their people that weren't going to get the mandate. And I call bull on that. And so, I mean, just think about it. The inspectors at the port for crops and the inspectors for bee. It's an endless deal. And I want to go over there and sign up, turn my crop report in, and I'm talking to a robot. I don't need that. And
exactly,
so,
Jimmy. But, and folks have said to me, why don't you stop it? Well, remember, President Biden, who happens to be a Democrat, is a chief executive. He's enforcing these rules under existing authority, he says. The Speaker of the House, even though there's barely more Democrats than Republicans, Nancy Pelosi from San Francisco is a Democrat. The Majority Leader of the United States Senate from New York, Chuck Schumer, is a Democrat. They have determined to support the president and push this agenda. So when we're in the minority, you can't move bills across the floor if the Speaker won't let them be heard. Now, that said, 11 months from now, we'll have an election, and the entire United States House will be on the ballot, a third of the Senate. I know for those people who are being pressured by this, that's a long, long time, but ultimately, the voters will decide who's right and wrong in this, and I have faith in my neighbors on Election Day, but we have to protect these folks as best we can until we get to that general election in November 2022, which is 11 months and some days away.
Yep, it is. Well, you're listening to Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO, and I'm Jimmy Clark, and I have U.S. Representative, Congress Representative Frank Lucas on the show with me. We got a few minutes left, so I got to throw the question out there. Oh, did I lose you? Yeah, there, I got you back.
You still got me,
yeah,
Jimmy.
There we go. My phone moved on me. I got a question for you on the personal side.
Yes.
Being a cattleman, with the drought forcing people, some in our area and up north and out west, to sell out their cattle, how do you see that what the effects of that's going to be? How do you see the effect of the cattle numbers and the markets going forward?
Number one, I think the drought will reduce the weight on cattle, so there'll be fewer pounds of beef over the course of the spring and summer. If you don't have wheat pasture, you don't have gain. That gain's going to have to be created by feeding grain to get there. We also have a world economy that's starting to move again. The supply chain issues are bedeviling us, but it's starting to move again. So I think you'll see a greater demand for high-quality protein. And not plant protein, no disrespect to my soybean constituents, but whether it's beef or pork, poultry, whatever, you'll see a higher demand for animal protein. That's going to be in the equation. Now, under the 2014 Farm Bill, which I was the chairman of when we wrote it,
and
the 2018 Farm Bill, yes, we have provisions dealing with drought, but you have to go so many days without rainfall to trigger the program to help. And it's triggered several times since 2014.
Yep.
So, like everybody who's listening today, I would rather have a slow 3 inches of rain over 4 days than
have
to trigger the drought provisions at USDA.
Yes.
But there is a backup there. And the other thing, Jim, we also have to be concerned about, we had enough grass growth this summer.
Yep.
And the cattle numbers are down in our region of the country. We have the potential for another really wild fire season come spring.
Yep.
And there's also language in the 14 and kept in the 18 Farm Bill that deals with, you know, the livestock loss indemnity from wildfires and those kind of things. So there's language in the Farm Bill, but it has to be so bad for so long, or you have to have a fire event to trigger it. It's on the books. But it's just ultimately, cattle prices will go up because there'll be fewer pounds of meat out there. But for those who are caught in drought areas, yeah, it's gonna continue to be tough.
Yeah, because your place was right in the middle of that drought we had back in 2010, 11, and 12. And I mean, it was bad. And you know,
the winter of 11, 12, Linda and I had native buffalo grass because the ground was so dry and the temperatures got so cold that winter. Died. My grandparents never talked about the grass dying from the drought in the Depression period in the 1930s. My parents never talked about the drought of the 50s, which was horrible too before my birth. They never talked about native pasture dying, but I had the pasture Linda and I did that died in 11-12. Now it came back, fortunately enough, seed load in the ground, it sprouted and came back and recovered, but it was unnerving to me when it finally greened up in the spring of 12 and you could just see these red patches, because you know where I'm at up in the red shale country, just acres of red ground where the buffalo had died. I'd never had that happen before, at least in the living memory of my ancestors.
The only thing I can remember from besides that, that you're talking about any grass kill, is back in 1982 when the whole month of December was below zero or just, you know, below freezing, and we had a little snow and ice on top of it. We lost some Bermuda grass then. And
it hammered the lovegrass, too.
Oh, yeah, it hammered the lovegrass, but that's it's crazy. Well, Mr. Lucas, I know you got a busy schedule right ahead of you, and I'm getting down to that last few minutes, and all I can I just want to tell you I appreciate you taking the time to be on the show today. And, hey, will you talk to your wife? I'd really like for her to come on the show. She is the president of the Roger Mills Cattle Association. And
that's true.
And I will send you a copy of this show so you can send it to her to know that we did talk about her in a good way.
Okay. I will visit with her. I don't tell her to do anything, remember, Jimmy. I'll visit with her.
I know. I never up there at the Roger Mills bull sale up there every spring. Uh-huh. She's the boss. So
there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I work building pens and taking pens down when it's over.
Well, you have a great day, and thank you again so much for being on the show today.
We'll visit in the future. Thanks, Jimmy.
All right. Bye. Thank you. Have a great day. Well, that was U.S. Congressman Frank Lucas on the show with me this morning, or today, there's some information there. I hope you guys enjoyed that. But we'll be right back after this. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Great news, folks. Ron Hayes here to let you know SEI Agritech in Elk City is now your livestock nutrition center dealer. This is better quality feed and minerals for your cattle, horses, sheep, and goats. Plus, at SEI Agritech, you can buy everything from bulk to 50-pound bags. Call or go see SEI Agritech today about your feed and mineral needs. Their number, 580-225-0317. 580-225-0317. Better feed, better results.
Are you in the market to buy or sell cattle? Then don't miss Hobart Stockyard's weekly cattle sale in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale's every Wednesday at 9:30 a.m., buyers can bid in person or online. To consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. That's 580-331-8547. Be sure and check out the market reports and each week's penny news. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and do appreciate it.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
Today in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
I'm back. Let me update this real quick. 68 degrees. Hadn't changed. Went out of the south at 8 miles an hour. I think Mr. Lucas did a great job answering the questions there, I thought. I mean, all he can do is answer. They didn't pass it. But anyway, it was a good deal. And I had some text messages while I was talking to him. This is one that says, what is the federal government doing about all the Chinese and drug cartels moving into Western Oklahoma? Well, they're actually moving into the whole state. If you go around down by Ardmore, up north by Perry and Billings, Oklahoma, and back over in Eastern, they're everywhere. These grow houses are, whether they're legal or not legal, they're everywhere. And Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Oklahoma, Blaine Archer, they are addressing it. I promise you. They're addressing it, and it's a state thing. It's not a federal thing because it's a state law that passed, not a federal law because, you know, as I do, is still the federal government doesn't recognize marijuana as a legal drug. So I think it's being handled, so we'll be good there. Okay, well, the stock market's down, but so is the grain market. Hard red winter wheat as of 11 o'clock when I wrote these down is at $7.87. That's down 30, 40 cents from yesterday. Corn's at 560. Milo's at 563 a bushel. Soybeans are down to $11.56 a bushel. And cotton's even down to $1.12 a pound. Wheat plunged in overnight trading as crop conditions were better than expected amidst profit-taking by speculative investors. About 44% of the U.S. winter wheat crop was in good or excellent condition as of Sunday, the Department of Agriculture said in its report. That's unchanged week to week, though analysts were expecting a modest decline. In Kansas, the biggest producer of the grain, 62% earned top ratings this week, up from 61% a week earlier. Oklahoma wheat, however, was rated 48% or excellent. That's down from 55% the previous week. And I'm going to go out on a limb and tell you why. It's because we need a rain. That's why. About 92% of the crop had emerged as the start of the week, up from 86% a week earlier and close to the prior five-year average of 91% for this time of the year, the agency said. This was the last crop progress report of the season from the USDA. Futures last week hit the highest level in almost 9 years, which likely is leading to some profit-taking by fund managers and other large investors. Soybean and corn futures also dropped in overnight trading on concerns that the spread that the Omicron, I hope I'm saying that right, because last night I got on social media and through all these TV stations and stuff, and every news announcer said it different. So I'm just going to go with Omicron. A variant of the coronavirus will curb global demand for agriculture products. Still, most people are taking a wait-and-see approach, as little is known this far about the variant. According to some resources out of South Africa, one of the ladies said that the Omicron is more contagious, but the... Oh, man, my brain just went dead. The thing, it's less, it's harder, not as hard on you as the Delta. So there we go. I'm lost for words. You guys can come do this show and see how easy it is to lose a word there and there. The World Health Organization said in a report yesterday that the transmissibility and the severity of the variant isn't clear. There, the severity, that's the word I was looking for a while ago. I guess I could have just kept reading. The severity wasn't as bad as the Delta, so I don't know. Maybe it's going. This will cycle through, and this thing will go away and just be around like the flu or something. Wheat futures for December delivery dropped 10¾ cents to $8.115 a bushel overnight on the Chicago Board of Trade. The Kansas City futures lost 14¾ cents to $8.425 a bushel. Corn futures for December delivery was down 8¼ cents to 5.74 a bushel. Soybean futures for November delivery plunged 12 cents to 12.39½ a bushel. Soy meal lost $3.70 to 3.39 a short ton, while soy oil declined 1.63 cents to 56.65 cents a pound. Inspections of corn and soybeans from overseas delivery declined week to week, according to the USDA. Corn assessments in the 7 days that ended on November 25th fell to 766,063 metric tons. Take that, Butch Black. I got that one out. From 825,650 tons a week earlier. That's also down from the 1.05 million tons examined for offshore delivery in the same week last year. Soybean inspections totaled 2.14 million metric tons, and that's down from 2.43 million tons a week earlier and 2.42 million tons a year earlier. Wheat bucked the trend as assessments last week was reported at 250,651 metric tons, and that was up from 192,822 tons the previous week. Still, that was well below the 534,534 metric tons inspected the same week a year ago. Since the start of the marketing year, which began on September 1st, the government has inspected 8.58 million metric tons of corn from the for export, and that's down from 10.3 million tons assessed during the same time frame a year earlier. Soybean assessments are now at 21.1 million metric tons, and that's down from 27.3 million tons examined a year earlier. Wheat inspections since the beginning of the grain marketing year on June 1st now stands at 10.8 million metric tons. That's down about 2 million tons from the same time period last year in 2020, according to the USDA. Strong winds are expected in parts of the southern plains today, along with warmer than normal temperatures, according to the National Weather Service. I guess you guys noticed Frank took Lacey's spot today on the show. I told Lacey I'd see her next week. I couldn't handle interviewing her and Frank the same day. I just don't have it in me. Anyway, she had a meeting at 12:30, so she couldn't be on the show. North winds are forecast from 15 to 25 miles an hour with gusts up to 40 miles an hour in parts of Oklahoma and Texas panhandles. That's not very far from us. The strongest winds will be in the area from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. local time. Temperatures have a chance to reach records on Thursday, the agency said. In Amarillo, Texas, just right west of us here, the record high is 78 degrees, and that was set in 2012, and that would have been in the drought. And in Delhart, Texas, the record is 78 degrees, also set in 1995. These records likely will be tested this week, according to the National Weather Service. Further north, rain is expected in parts of Minnesota. I ain't going to read that. I don't even want to hear about the rain. Well, anyway, looks like the not only is the stock market taking a hit, the grains are taking a hit. Well, you guys know that today is Heyday Tuesday, and let's go over some of the markets before I go to break. Well, looks like the hay market is slowly but surely creeping up. And by the way, if anybody got any hay they want to sell or they need to buy some, throw me a text on the KECO Ag text line at 580-225-9697. I'll put it out there. I hope it helps you, but let's use the power of radio to help you guys out. We'll call it, we got Tradio, we'll call it Hadio, all right? And I'm not Drew Cobb, but I'm close. He's a brother of mine from another mother. So anyway, here we go. Hay prices for an alfalfa premium. California looks like it's probably the highest. $245 to $335 on premium. $230 to $250 on good. Let's go to Kansas. $180 to $400. That $400 being delivered. $135 to $200 delivered on good alfalfa in Kansas. Missouri, our neighbors to the east, over there in the northeast corner of Oklahoma. $160 to $250 on alfalfa premium. $120 to $160 on good. New Mexico, $200 to $320 delivered on premium. $165 to $200 on good. Who else? Oklahoma, $180 to $190. That looks unchanged from last week. $140 to $160 per ton on good hay. Texas, $250 to $325 delivered on premium. $225 to $260 delivered on good hay. Here we go. Grass hay. We have, let's pick out a state. Kansas, $125 to $140 on premium. That's per ton. Good grass hay, 65 to 185. That 185 was delivered. Missouri was 140 on premium grass hay, $80 to $100 per ton on good. And we get down here to Oklahoma, 85 to 120 on premium per ton, 75 to 160 on good. And I'm going to guess that 160 was delivered. Yep, should be. Texas, 160 to 330 on premium grass hay, 120 to 275 on good. And it doesn't have a D by it, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that was probably delivered. Well, I'm going to take a short break. When I get back, I got the Hobart Farm and Garden Long Ranger forecast. Nope, I don't. I'm running short. Oh, I'm running short here. But anyway, when I get back, we'll talk about some hay waste and some other things with the cattle market. See you here in a little bit. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
This is the Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction Market Report for Monday, November 29th. 1,378 head were sold. 4 head of steers at 416 brought 195. 22 at 586 brought 172. 12 at 672 brought 163.50. 15 at 696 brought 154. 5 at 731 brought 155. 3 at 882 brought 135. 6 head of heifers at 367 brought 177. 15 at 419 brought 183. 18 at 561 brought 141.50. 7 at 642 brought 134. 4 at 716 brought 125. 6 at 795 brought 145.50. Butcher cows were 4 to 73. Butcher bulls 60 to 98. Bred cows 300 to 1275. Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction, exit 71, Clinton, Oklahoma. Sale every Monday at 10 a.m. To consign, call Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
Are there any beef eaters out there? Well, sink your teeth into this. The Elk City Rotary Club's giving you a chance to win a side of beef and a freezer to keep it in with the beef sweepstakes. Get one ticket for $25 or five tickets for just $100. Go by First National Bank and Trust of Elk City to get your tickets. Grand prize is a side of beef and a freezer. Second and third prizes are a quarter beef each. Winners chosen December 11th at 8 p.m. at Elk City's Christmas in the Park in Ackley Park. Beef up your Christmas and help some great local projects with the Elk City Rotary Club's Beef Sweepstakes.
Beef, it's what's for dinner.
Today in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
Beef, it's what's for dinner. Anyway, let me open this up real quick. My bad. I was going to do that, and somebody messed up my text board. Here we go. Looks like they had an awesome sale yesterday at the Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction. 1,378 head were sold, and I'm going to go through here and rattle off some pricing. There was some weighing 416 cutter bulls, $195. That's really good. Had some steers weighing 527, 165. We have some winged here that came from Weatherford. Average weight 586. They were winged, brought $172 per hundred weight. Get down here to, we got some from Clinton. Yearlings, 672, brought $1.6350 per hundred weight. And we got some winged at 696, brought $1.54. And then we had some yearlings at 148 head, actually, from Wheeler, it looks like. 836 average weight, brought $1.5685. On the heifer side, Watonga, some heads weighing 367, $1.77. They were winged. And then down here, some more winged. 15 head, 419, brought $1.83. 25 head from Hydro. Average weight 555, brought $157.25 per hundred weight, and they were winged. This is on the heifers now. And then we got some more heifers, 564 winged, brought $1.56. And then down here at the bottom, there was some heifers from Arapaho that were winged, averaging $7.95, brought $145.50 per pound, and they were winged. For the butcher cows they would have had there yesterday, they were bringing up to $73 per hundred weight. Butcher bulls, looks like they're back up a little bit, brought $98 per hundred weight. And they had some bred cows that were bringing up to $12.75 on that deal. So, looked like a pretty good sale yesterday. Sorry I missed out on it. I was busy. Well, During each step of making, storing, or feeding hay, waste can add up quickly and become costly. And I got this from my hay and forage grower, and it had some interesting comments in here, and that's the reason why I'm going to go with their story with you. With the current record high prices seen in some regions, storage and feeding losses have never been more expensive. Improved hay storage and feeding is something that we should look at every year, according to Brian Fricking with Oklahoma State University during a recent webinar series he put out. Some of the waste can be controlled and minimized. Field losses will always occur when making hay, but certain areas of loss can be controlled. According to Fricking, forage respiration losses can vary from 2 to 16% depending on the area. Raking can cause 5% to 20% loss, which depend on the type of rake. Also, if your hay's not in case, it's you're going to knock the leaves off. So that's where that 20% comes in. The best rake for using for minimizing waste depends on your situation and your location, according to him. If you're trying to dry something down quicker, a rotary rake may be better. If you're trying to save on cost, the wheel rake might be the tool to use. The main factor that can't be controlled when making hay is the weather. According to him, all hay is rained. If hay is rained on after being cut, there can be dry matter losses of 8 to 17%. Neutral detergent fiber concentrations rise and total digestible nutrients, the TDN, declines. He suggests that hay may be stored in a barn to reduce waste. We typically only see 2 to 5% losses for hay stored in barns. Whereas for uncovered hay and hay stored outside, there can be levels of loss of 25%. That's a fourth of your hay crop. Store bales off the ground to minimize spoilage. If round bales are stored directly on the ground, we can see 5 to 20% loss in the first 9 months. If you are storing the hay even longer than that, you could see losses up to 50%. If you elevate the bales by putting them on a pallet, for example, the percentage of loss is greatly reduced. Here's my opinion on that little statement. Use the right wrap. Put enough wraps on it, and you can minimize that a lot. And I've tested it. I'm not going to go over the type of wrap that I use or like to use, because I've used 3 or 4 different kinds this year. But I'm telling you, there's a wrap out there that if you'll put an extra wrap on your bale of hay. Right now, I put three wraps on my hay. When I'm doing peanut hay, I do 4, even up to 5 wraps, because that peanut hay is hard to keep together. But 3 wraps only cost me 75 cents per bale more to put that wrap on there. So put an extra wrap on there. It really won't matter which wrap you use, but there's some wraps out there that are way better under the sun than the other wraps. So if you ever got a question about that, shoot me a text here and I'll answer that. The Extension Livestock Specialist also encouraged listeners to store hay in location where water doesn't puddle. Very smart. Way it's draining through there where bales are fully exposed to the sun. Allow some space between bales so that when it rains, the hay has a chance to completely dry. For large round bales, more spoilage occurs in the outer layer. According to him, the amount of hay cattle will refuse to eat can be predicted. If you see a 6-inch outer layer on a 5-foot diameter bale, you're losing 35% of dry matter on that bale, which can add up very quickly. Now, I'm going to skip that part on the bagging, but when feeding hay, here we go. This is the last part of this, and we'll go to break. When feeding hay, the feeder design can impact the amount of waste. An Oklahoma State University study found that a basket-type hay feeder has about 5% waste, and a sheeted bottom feeder has around 13% waste. Both conventional open bottom hay rings and polyurethane pipe rings result in about 20% waste in a 72-hour period. Well, he ain't got my cows because mine's gone in 24 hours. Feeding hay without a feeder can result up to 45% waste. If the hay is fed, rolled out, a day's worth of hay at a time to minimize loss. If you roll out a week's worth of hay at a time, you're going to have a lot of waste. A good goal is 85% utilization by allotting a day's worth of hay at a time. According to him, placing an electric fence down the middle of an unrolled bale of hay can enhance cattle utilization of hay bales for about 90%. The strategy is similar to strip grazing. Running the electric fence down the middle of the unrolled hay keeps cattle from laying on it. Still, you want to unroll hay on a daily basis or no more than enough for a couple days. Well, when the ground's frozen, the electric fence ideal, it sucks. That's all I can tell you. Well, it's the Day in Ag on 96.5 KECO. I'll be right back with your Long Ranger.
It's known as the thief in the night. A lack of cattle mineral can lead to decreased weaning weights, small, weak calves, and severely compromised health. Don't let a gap in your feeding program rob your herd's performance. Stop by Farmers Union Co-op in Elk City and pick up a bag of Purina Wind and Rain Storm Mineral today. Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City is your authorized Purina dealer.
Docility is probably the biggest selling point for Red Angus. Red Angus cattle are just more docile as a breed, just bred into them. It's been that way for years, since the inception of the breed. My two kids, and not just the kids, the older generation, they don't want to mess with bulls that are not gentle. Red Angus are more gentle to handle. We raise registered Red Angus, Benji White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com on Facebook. Follow us at B&L Red Angus.
This hour's weather is brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden.
Complete nutrition for every animal. That's what you'll find at High Pro Feeds. At High Pro, their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. Buy the best and get the most out of every animal. Hobart Farm and Garden in Hobart, Oklahoma is your local High Pro Feeds dealer, providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, and sacks. Check them out on Facebook and online at HobartFarmAndGarden.com.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
All right. Hey, how about all this college coaching deals? Wow. I mean, Lincoln Riley got whipped by the OSU Cowboys and it scared him. He went to the West Coast out there to join the LA Gangland. And then Brian Kelly last night, Notre Dame, going down there with I can't say the word I want to say. He's joining the French Quarters people down there. I got a buddy, Mr. Thibodeau, up north here. He likes that word that I use, but I can't use it on the radio. But, wow, what about that? All I can see out of the deal, my personal opinion is, those two coaches and some more things that's happened in the last few years in college football has just showed these young kids that they don't have to be loyal to anybody to get rich, and it's a shame. So Bob Stoops, yep, he's a good man. He's a loyal man. He's an OU Oklahoma fan. There we go. He's good. Our Hope Farm and Garden Long Ranger forecast. Currently it's 68 degrees. The winds are out of the south at 8 miles an hour. Humidity is at 27. Still need to be careful out there starting fires. So this afternoon looks like we're going to get up to 71. The wind will shift here in a little bit. Be out of the northeast. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 72 with a northwest wind, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Thursday, sunny and high near 75, light and variable winds become south, southwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour in the morning on Thursday. Friday, sunny near high with 73. Saturday, sunny with a high near 56. So that cold front looks like it's coming in Friday night. So get your long johns out. 56 is cold around here nowadays. Sunday, start warming right back up. High near 62. And then Monday, high near 61. Looks like we got dry weather ahead, gentlemen. Hate it. I don't have anything else. I don't have any good news for you on the wet weather. Here we go. The global beef market is set to tighten up in 2022. This is why I asked Frank about what he thought the locale numbers and the market was going to do in, for the future. What effects have everybody, especially, they already have, most of them have, but there's some more going on. South Dakota, North Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona, and New Mexico, at least the eastern, western part of New Mexico, they've been culling cows because of no rain out there. The depopulation of U.S. cattle accelerated this year due to poor economics and drought liquidation across the western U.S. beef and dairy cow slaughter has increased by 6%, which will lead to a 2.5% decline in U.S. beef production in 2022, according to a recent report from Rainbow Bank. There we go. Although production is contracting and domestic demand is strong, the U.S. has moved from being a net importer to a net exporter. U.S. beef exports are expected to increase 2-4% in 2022. Markets in Japan, South Korea, Mexico, and Canada remain strong, but the growth in exports to China is driving the increase in export volume. China has become the third largest export destination for the United States, and export volumes continue to rise. The ongoing strength in the U.S. demand, together with the expected contraction in production, does a present opportunity for beef imports to increase. However, the expected ongoing elevated cow slaughter with temper imports on lean manufacturing beef will limit given reduced supplies on the two of the largest suppliers of least lean trimmings. You guys understand that coming from Brazil, that them are just trimmings coming in. Them's not live cattle coming in from Brazil. So I want you guys to understand that everybody thinks that we're importing more cattle than we should, but there's a lot more to the story there. So anyway, I hope to have somebody on one of these days that will explain the import or the import of cattle to the United States a little more. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed Representative Lucas on today. Have a great day and God bless.